Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Deadline's new Hollywood podcast. We are in quarantine, and my name is Jenna Ray Ramos.
And I am Amanda Nduka. And for this episode, this is a really exciting episode, you guys. This is one of my favorite all-time favorite shows. I think I've talked about it on the podcast before, but we have Issa Rae, the co-creator and star of HBO's Insecure.
Yes.
It's back for a fourth season.
And by the time this airs, the first season,
the first episode
would have aired on Sunday. So
right, the 12th.
And wait, Amanda, did you watch the first couple episodes, or did you get? Oh, you didn't. Oh, God, man.
I was gonna. I've been in a mood, so I actually watched the last season just so I can remember everything that happened. But
Without giving anything away, this season, and we talk about it on the podcast.
I try to get some spoilers out of her.
But also, I think this has been building, if you've seen the relationship between Molly and Issa throughout this series. So, that's all I'm going to say.
I'm excited about this show. I know it took a long time and people were frustrated, but like Issa, she says in the podcast, like, she needed time to do other things. She starred in two movies, Lovebirds and The Photograph. Lovebirds will be out later on this year on Netflix. The Photograph.
Yeah.
I think The Photograph is out digitally now, right? Did they release it digitally?
And I was really bummed. You know, I mean, I've already said this, how I was bummed that South by Southwest was canceled just because I was a juror, but also Lovebirds was supposed to premiere there. And, it's devastating, but you know, it's still coming out.
It found a second home, which is cool. I think the Netflix deal thing was actually a really good idea, honestly. But yeah, she has all these other things coming up, and I love how she's such a champion of new voices, and I think we've seen that like throughout her work so far. And I'm just like, I'm excited about this season. I always say, like, I have a, like, Molly and Issa, like, that's my friend group right there. Like, all those people, Kelly, all of them, I have friends like that. So it's so refreshing to see something like that on TV.
And I'm going to say again, this season, I mean, we talk about it, but it gets into it about the dynamics of friendship. And, you know, I think, you know, personally, you know, when you have a friend who what purpose do you serve? You know, when you have a friend who's like, you lose touch. I mean, we grow apart,
right?
And you don't want to talk to them anymore. Like, I think honestly, breaking up with a friend might be worse than breaking up with a significant other, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not spoiling anything, guys.
Yeah.
I
think I would say that, because especially with our friends, like, we go through a lot with them. Like, it's like especially my friends and like how we are, you go through a lot. So it's a very hard loss, and it's an unexpected loss too. You never really expect to lose a friend, right? Like relationships like, or significant others, like those are, you know, always like rocky and whatever. But with friends, it's like, you know, you're expecting to ride to the sunset, and sometimes it doesn't.
Sometimes they just get so annoying that you just don't want to see them anymore.
Exactly. And I mean, shoot, perfect time, quarantine. So
this is a good time to reflect on your friend group.
Yeah, seriously.
And who you want to cut, and who makes the cut, and who stays. You know?
We talk about that,
it's
too.
It's like Project Runway. It's like the Project Runway of friendship.
We talk about our top eight, remember? But anyway, so we are going to, without further ado, here is Issa. Well, thanks again, Issa, for doing this and for joining us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, huge fans of the show, and we're definitely going to talk about season four, but we want to, for this podcast, we like to get a lot of backstory on people's journeys and everything. So where did this all start for you? Where did you first learn about your creativity and your comedy, and who were some of your inspirations?
I think for me, everything started with my family. My family is very funny. My mom is hilarious and extremely goofy, and really encourage the five of us to tap into that. And I remember just thinking her and my older brothers were very funny, and trying to make them laugh. And so it started at home. And then, you know, as I went to school, I got into acting in the fifth grade when they cast me as Demetrius, the only black girl in school, in a play. And I was like, my mom was like, that's racist. And I was like, oh, wait, hold up. This is kind of dope, though. And really liked that experience and just got into writing plays for other people. Mm. So like in middle school, writing plays for my classmates. And then in high school, being in them. And then ultimately just watching more film and television series and realizing that that was a medium that I could break into too.
So was it, because your dad is from Senegal, right? And he's a doctor?
He is, yeah.
And your mom's a teacher? So was it encouraged? Because I, like we're, Dina and I talk about this all the time, being from, you know, families of first generation.
Like immigrants, yeah.
Yeah. The arts are not really encouraged all the time in the household, just mainly because it's not something that our parents really grew up with. So was that something that they encouraged for you once they saw that you had a real interest in it?
My dad is a natural storyteller. And I think even in Senegalese culture, like, you know, there's huyos, there's like, you know, storytelling is such a huge part. Humor is such a huge part. But career-wise, he was always like, that should be your plan B, your plan A. Should be the stability route. Like, it should be, you know, medicine or law or business. But my mom was always really supportive because she had her creative side. You know, she was in the assistant director's program, you know, back in the day before she had us. So she understood that value. But my dad, it took him a little longer to come around.
Right. When did he come around?
Is he still coming around?
He's still coming around. No, he's proud. I remember, like, feeling super touched when I saw him posing by an insecure bus bench for season one. Yeah. Because up until then, he had still been, like, the grad school still around. Like, you could still apply.
Like, you could still go, like, to med school, you know? It's not too late. Like,
come on, give it up.
my dad,
you know there's med school still, right? You know?
My dad still tells me till this day that I can still go to med school. I'm like, Dad, I'm over 30 now. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, no, my oldest brother is, like, born in 76. So he's got to be, like, 44. And my dad is holding on to him for his only hope.
I joke sometimes, you know, I look at the landscape of Hollywood and how trash it could be. And I joke to my friends and my family and I'm just going to lean into it since I'm Filipino. I'm just going to become a nurse. That's it. I'm going to become a nurse.
I know, right?
At least I'll be doing something good for the world.
Right? At least I'm helping people. Like, shoot.
Bless you.
I mean, my sister's a nurse. My cousins are nurses.
Oh,
my dad's...
they need to be satisfied then. That's crazy.
So, Issa, when you started, you know, Awkward Black Girl, you know, what was your intention with that, and how has that intention evolved to now season 4 of Insecure?
Mm-hmm. Ooh, what a journey.
I know. Let's talk about this journey. We're going to get to it.
We want to hear all about it.
Well, I created it with the intention of making an archetype that I was complaining about not seeing. So I was constantly like, why is there such a singular, at times degrading representation of black women on my television screen? And I'm so tired of people creating these characters that don't look like me or any of my friends, that don't look like anybody real that I know personally. Mm-hmm. And even if, you know, I did know them personally, that's not all we are. And so for me, it was just about making that, because I had a blog at the time and someone was like, you complain a lot, like, make it then. And I was like, okay, because I'll make it and then I can continue talking shit, because I'll be like, oh, it's possible. And so that's where that came. And, you know, I'd been sitting on it for such a long time and then got inspired by an article that came out that basically said the same thing as I did, that was just looking for, like, the black Liz Lemon. And was like, you know, moved by fear to finally just stop making excuses and create it. And then that, you know, from the first episode, I saw so many people resonating with it, and the audience just grew and grew and grew. And, you know, that led to a lot of other opportunities to create, but it was a very slow burn. And that led to, you know, being noticed by Shonda Rhimes and Betsy Beers and having an opportunity to create a show with them, and then learning to hone my comedic voice for television. And that wasn't necessarily the most seamless transition. But I learned so much and appreciated so much until HBO, you know, ultimately after, when ABC passed on that pilot, reached out to have me work on Insecure.
Seeing back then compared to now, has like, how has your view on, has your view on the show kind of changed, or is it like just evolved?
How has my view on Insecure changed?
Yeah.
It's changed in the sense that first season was like, you're creating in a vacuum, and that it's exhilarating, and you're just hopeful that you get to make the product that you set out to make, and you're working with new people, and it's just like, you're finding your footing, and it's fun. Second season, you're dealing with more expectation, but it's like exciting expectation. It's like, oh shit, people are excited for us to come back. That's so dope. And we have people are talking about our characters just as everyday lingo. That's amazing. And then by season three, I was like, I'm a little tired. I don't want people's opinions anymore. I'm grasping at the last moments in my life that I've lived and putting it into the show, and I'm not necessarily living. And we were under a lot of scrutiny during the time where I was just like, what the fuck, this is a show. And I've never tried to proclaim to represent Black people, and people keep heralding it as this thing that is supposed to represent Black people, and I don't want that. And I'm also getting the unjust criticism for that, so fuck that. And I wanted a break.
And then a well-deserved break, and you were doing other things.
I was doing other things, and that was what I wanted to do too. I was like, I'm kind of itching. This is 9 months out of my life. And you know, I'm grateful, but I want to see what else I can do. I want to try to work on other people's projects, and so that's, but then by the time season four came and we had that break, like, I was so excited to be back. And I'm appreciative again.
Yeah, so let's just unpack season four, because I mean, like I said, I'm a huge fan of this show. I always say, like, I have a Molly in my life, like like the Issa's friends, and that's like my friend group. So like, I was one of the people that was like, it did take a while, and I was highly waiting for this next season. What can we expect? Because I know now Issa's in her 30s, and she's sort of like, she's in her 30s, and she quit her job, and she's doing her own thing now, and I know that's going to come with a lot of stuff. What can we expect? What are you most excited for people to see through your character this season?
My character from the beginning, this has been a show about a girl who doesn't know who she is or where she's going. And I think, you know, throughout the seasons, we've seen Issa grow incrementally. And I think this season especially is just about her coming into who she is. And I think we've also seen throughout the season how much she feeds off of the people around her to gas her up. And at the end of season three, it was a step in her deciding, like, I gotta be here for me, you know, and I can only gas myself up, and I gotta figure this shit out. And I think with the transition from 20s to 30s, one of the things that I found most interesting in my life is just how the relationships and friendships around you in your 20s are kind of by default, by your surroundings. Right. And, you know, once you graduate from college, if you went to school, you know, you may have friends from school, and you hold on to those friends because you're in the same location, or just because you went to school together, you have something in common that bonds you. And I think as you move into your 30s, you're starting to figure out who you are and who you want to become, and what works for you, and what you won't stand for. And you find that some of the people around you don't necessarily fit anymore. And so what do you do with that? You know? And so I think that's what this season is about.
So there sounds like there are going to be some challenges for Issa and Molly in this season.
Well, full disclosure, I've seen the first 5 episodes.
Okay. I was trying to be as, you know, broad as possible.
Yeah.
No, we don't want any spoilers here, but just, you know, some nice little teases. This is Deadline, you know?
Yeah. Of course. I think the friendship is definitely being challenged in a real way. In one of those ways where it's just like, okay, we've had arguments in the past, but now, like, this is coming down to who we are as people, and we have to figure that out.
That's so real, though. Like, with your, especially with friends that you've been through it with. It's so real. It's like all, I think even like, not like, I don't want to say like, I don't want to give it. Well, we're not giving anything away. But like, when you have a friend who you're like, oh, what is your place in my life anymore?
I think we all have those like moments where we reevaluate the people in our lives. And like, what purpose do you serve?
That's so true. It's so sad.
It is sad.
Even when you're like thinking about, like, I think about being in my 20s and there are at least 3 people where I was like, oh, I know we're going to be grown old together. Like, there's no doubt that we're going to be the aunties and kicking it and talking shit, and then as time progresses you realize, oh shit, I outgrew, like, you're still the same bitch. I don't know if you're ever gonna, your mind is ever gonna make it to 60 because you're still on some old 20 shit, you know, and I'm like, I'm trying to grow up, but it's sad too, because it hurts to let certain people go.
Definitely.
What about relationships? What can you tease about? Are there about the new bays in the season?
The new bays. I mean, you've seen from the trailer that Molly is, you know, pursuing a relationship with Asian Bay. Issa is single. So that means, you know, she's out here focusing on herself. She's not putting a lot of pressure on any of her relationships. So that means she can fuck around with people that she might not normally fuck around with.
Yeah.
You know, she's got to get hers. And Kelly stays with a boo.
So I don't want to give away what happened. Natasha's been on our podcast too.
One of her boos this season is a cameo that I'm excited about. Someone that I'm a huge fan of.
I'm not gonna lie, like the first couple episodes, I'm like, oh my god, this is gonna be a mess.
It's one of those things where it's just like, and I think that's to Molly's point of it, not to get too much away. It's just like, the other thing about those friendships is like, you see your friends through old eyes and you see your friends through eyes of history. And I think historically, Issa's decisions have blown up in her face a lot. And so I think Issa is just like, no, I have this situation under control. And, you know, I think that I can make this work. And we're all mature adults here. And I've already said that I'm over this man. So we'll see if that's true or not.
Well, speaking of insecure bays, you know, Alexander Hodge, who's Molly's Asian bay, he's actually coming on the podcast tomorrow.
Yay! Yeah. I love him.
Yeah.
No, never mind. He's trash. He's actually a terrible. So good luck with that.
You know, Insecure features Alexander, and, you know, you also star in the upcoming Lovebirds with Kumail Nanjiani. And, you know, in your book, you talked about how Asian men and Black women are being the least desirable when it comes to dating. Were these choices that you made directly connected with that? And why do you think... Do you think this is still the case now with, you know, Asian men and Black women being undesirable, quote unquote?
Yeah, so that came from a study I read in like 2010, 2011. And then it resurfaced when dating apps came around and I was like, oh shit, this is an argument that I've been like, I used to get that same blog that I used to talk shit. I was like, oh, that's so interesting that we're supposed to be the least desired. And this was also the Steve Harvey era of like why Black women can't catch men. And so, you know, I wrote a satirical essay about it and then, you know, found out that through dating apps that this was actually a true thing. And so, yeah, Insecure, that storyline in particular was a play off of that excerpt in my book of just, you know, exploring that dynamic, but not necessarily as blatant or as overt, and just seeing what that dynamic looked like. Because I also don't love interracial relationships where on screen where that's just all that's talked about. Like people who are in interracial relationships don't talk about being in interracial relationships all the time, as far as I know.
I don't think that's the thing. I feel like that would get boring.
I'm in an interracial relationship. That's how they begin.
Well, if you watch Blind Date, they did talk about Cameron and Lauren did talk about being in an interracial relationship a lot. But I feel like
that was the producers like, hey, probably. Talk about it. So, like, dating them. But yeah, so I think that there's stuff that happens around and there are conversations to be had. But for me, the choice in Lovebirds was definitely not based off of that. The choice to be in Lovebirds was like, oh, the script was funny and Kumail's in it and he's hilarious. He's already attached. I'd love to see what our dynamic is. But there was, to be honest, and something interesting to me about being in an interracial relationship in movies where one of the characters was not white, where both of the characters were not white.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see that often.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. What did you guys film Lovebirds before or after Kumail got super jacked?
It was right before when he told me he was going to do it. He was like, hey, don't tell anybody, but I got cast in a Marvel movie. And I was like, what the fuck? What? And he was, you know, doing a diet then during the same time. I'm always on some stupid ass diet. So I was just already just in love, like friend love with him. Like, oh shit, we're about to diet together. And we can talk about all the crazy things. And then he just surpassed any level that I would ever be on.
But well, apparently Emily, his wife, he's like even in more shape than he was when they posted those pictures, like during this quarantine. So he's just doing it.
It's like once you start, you can't stop. Like, come on, like, especially like after like everybody, like all the comments afterwards. Like,
that's true. Yeah. That's a good ass point. Like, you can't slip because people are going to be like, what happened? I remember when you had a six pack. Now you have a two pack. What the fuck?
Right? Are you okay?
You have to maintain.
Issa, what's your quarantine diet right now?
I'm actually doing great, even though I ordered this like there's this account I have been following for a minute called World's Best Cookie Dough, and I'd always put off ordering it because you have to like get sold out really quickly, and I just never had time. So I was like, oh, look what I have right now, time, and. ordered these crazy cookies. But beyond that, I've just been, I generally stick to just like paleo. And
I've just been eating lots of like.
Me too. That's why I asked.
I just eat everything. Ramen, honestly. Not like ramen that you buy, not the top ramen, but the ramen, the real ramen that you buy from the Korean market.
Still. I'm a terrible social eater, so there's not much socializing I'm doing. So it's easier to stay disciplined when you're not like around your friends all the time and drinking.
That makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense. I think I might be the other way around. I don't know, or maybe just somewhere in the middle.
I think I have too much anxiety. I think right now I have too much anxiety to eat.
So much. I think the anxiety is making me eat more.
Yes, I've been there too.
So, So, how has your role as an actor and as a storyteller changed your view on advocacy? And specifically, we all know you to be somebody who's very, like, very unapologetically Black, which is obviously something that we love. Where did you find that confidence to sort of be so unapologetic about the things that you say or the things that you put out there as an artist?
I guess my mom, you know, she's always been instilled like pride in us, you know, she's from Louisiana, but really raised in LA and grew up in a pro-Black era, you know, and I think going to synagogue, being in Francophone countries, like she's seen so much and she's always just been so adamant about us knowing who we were, where we came from, being proud of being Black. And I think that has always translated. And of course, going to predominantly Black schools, I think my predominantly Black high school, being around other Black and Latino kids from all walks of life, going to a medical magnet high school where you saw like kids from Compton who, you know, were poor, but also, you know, wealthier kids from View Park and Ladera, all in one place, just being dope. Like, none of us are doctors now, maybe like five of us, but it was still just like, wow, this is incredible. And I'm so proud about, and this is just something that you don't get to showcase. And then going to college and being immersed with other just amazing Black people, I've just always felt like a sense of pride. And so the unapologetic part, just like, why would I apologize for that? You know, why would I be ashamed of that? And especially with the injustices that we face on a day-to-day basis, if you're not talking about it, then it's just being swept under the rug. It's being ignored. And I don't consider myself an activist by any means. I'm not brave by any means, but I'm honest, and I'm not going to shy away from what I see. I'm not going to shy away from what's wrong. And, you know, I tend to be very action oriented behind the scenes. And I want to support people who are the same.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's so good and refreshing that you said that. I mean, like, the girls were gagging when you were on the red carpet and you said you were rooting for anyone who was Black. And then people were all excited about, you know, you just calling, you know, during the Oscar nominations. That was like also a moment. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, I think it's, for me, it's very much appreciative that there are voices like that out there. And, you know, that you have, you know, the backs of, you know, underrepresented voices, and, you know, people are all, ooh, she said that. But, you know, at the same time, it's like, oh, it's not like she was lying.
Thank you for saying that. I mean, I guess I don't, for me, it doesn't feel like, ooh, she said that. I'm like, everybody knows this, right? Like, I'm saying, to me, it feels like I'm saying the obvious. Like, who are you rooting for? Duh, girl. Like, you know, I would expect you to be like, the reporter to be like, oh, all my Asian people, because there's not a lot of us. And I wouldn't be mad at that. So it's just like, to me, it's just, it's telling the truth.
Yeah, exactly, right. Exactly.
You have a lot going on. what's next for you after Insecure and then Lovebirds that's gonna hit Netflix? I can't. The date is.
Oh yeah, it hasn't been announced. The date hasn't been announced.
Okay. Yet. Okay. Good. I was like, did I not read this date? I thought I did. but what's next for you after that?
This. So much. I'm. In these quarantine times, able to catch up on all the writing that I got paid to do. So that's great. I'm writing a feature film right now, adapting an Italian film called Perfect Strangers, which I'm really excited about. And also writing an HBO Max show called Rap Shit.
Female
rappers. And beyond that, just finished filming a BJ Novak movie in New Mexico. Vengeance. But that the production got halted, so I don't know how much they got done of it, but I was like, I shot my scenes. Sorry, BJ. I'm out.
But like I'm good.
And yeah, and then just producing several other projects from other writers I'm really excited about.
At this point, is there something that you're really like itching to do that you haven't been able to cover yet in your career?
Itching to do? Yeah. Like, I think I want to, there again, there are so many writers that I love that I want to see their shit get made, like new writers. So there are other people that I've been, you know, working with for a while. Like, there's one writer, Sarita Singleton, who, you know, I met in 2014, who inspired me starting Color Creative. She came to like one of our writers workshops, and she did the thing where she was like, hey, can you read my script? And usually I'm like, I don't want to. So, but I read it and that shit cracked me up, and I was like, I wish that I could make this. And you know, at the time all I had was Awkward Black Girl, and I was just like, we should be able to make low budget pilots and have people and just showcase the work of good writers so that people know about them. And since then, to see all that she's done, I'm just hyped for her movie to come out. She wrote a hilarious feature that I feel like is the next Friday. And, you know, other things.
Nice.
And then just, you know, other people that I'm excited about. Like, that's what I'm itching to do. I'm kind of, I'm tired of me. and I'm so excited about the next generation or the now generation.
Do you want to do an action film?
It doesn't like get me hype. They're like action. I don't even watch action movies, so I get the appeal of like, this is what you should be doing. And I'm the, if the check comes and the not even the check. Let me stop lying. Like, I do that. Like, if it's a different, then I would be honored and excited to do it. But I'm not like pressed.
You're not ready to get like CG'd and go into martial arts training and all that.
No, I'm so lazy. Like, I'd be like hype in the moment and then be like, I gotta train for this. Like, I cannot do that. I saw Cynthia Erivo doing that for Widows. I used to watch her Insta stories of her like working out with the trainer. So
it's too much.
It's too much.
She's a beast. Okay, so we just like to end our session with this fun random questions. We call it the facts or the FAQs.
Okay.
So this is gonna be sort of a quarantine edition. what is an unlikely film or TV show that you've discovered during quarantine?
Cheer.
Oh.
I don't give a fuck about Cheerleaders and I said that, but I left with a new respect of just like, these are Olympic gymnasts. Like, they are doing it.
That show is intense, man.
Shout out to that coach.
No, seriously, and it's like all these kids from all these different backgrounds, like it's just it was definitely like it was interesting.
I mean, I remember I don't know if your school was like this, Amanda, because me and Amanda are both from Texas but from different cities. But it's like, of course, high school football is super competitive, but cheerleading was just as competitive.
Not my school.
Oh, not your school.
There are a bunch of massage, and I'm just kidding. No, not my school.
it was intense, man.
I didn't know.
Yeah. But that one is a whole different level, though. It's I'm like, all this.
No,
is,
it is.
I can't.
Their bones are gonna be useless by like 30.
I know.
I was definitely like getting my Bring It On vibe with that watching that show.
So Issa, what is one song that you turn the volume up every time it comes on?
Lil Scrappy, No Problem. Yeah, it just makes me feel like I will fight anybody.
Oh my God. You know what song that made me, this is the song that I turn up. It's, Slim, Real Thugs, get David Banner, Real Thugs.
Real Thugs, get down on the floor. Like
I love, yes. Like a Pimp. I like printed out the lyrics to that. I learned that song. So every time that song comes on, like,
oh my God,
I get so hyped. Like, I get so hyped when that song comes on.
Well, you know that, you gotta go.
Yeah. mine is always, it's like Juvenile, Back That Ass Up for some reason. That's,
for some reason. That's, come on.
That's like an anthem. That's an anthem.
It's an anthem because it's like when those strings come in, you know it's about to go down.
Yeah. No, seriously.
Yeah. I'm just like, oh, what's going on?
What is the first thing you're going to do when the shutdown lifts?
Oh my, go see my family, hug them.
Yeah.
Yes. Go see my friends and drink. Like, I thought I was going to be having insecure pool parties every week, and that's a lie.
Well, it could still happen. You just have to postpone.
Sure. Everybody's going to be so busy. It's going to be really interesting.
Oh my God. There's going to be so much going on. Yeah. There's going to be so much to do.
It's going
to
be interesting. It's going to be like the Oscars are going to be running into like summer blockbuster season. It's going to be so weird.
Shit. That's so true.
Yeah.
And like all these like festivals, they're all going to be back to back to back now. And I'm just like, ugh.
I know. I'm just like, and then, you know, it's a good thing to complain about though once that happens.
Right. It is.
Yeah. If we're still not like scared to go out. You know, I'm like, am I going to go to brunch without a mask on? You know?
Yeah. Probably not.
I mean, like, one thing that, because I've been following, like, if Comic-Con's going to happen, and I, you know, honestly, if it does happen, it's going to be so scaled back because no one's going to want to go into a room with 6,000 other people after a global pandemic. But
no.
Yeah,
it's gonna have to be like a slow like reintroduction to everything. So I feel like it's gonna be like maybe 10 people gathering, and then 100, and then it's gonna go up in like increments like that.
That's so true, because it is like, why would I need to be at a space with 6,000 people? I'm wondering, like, why do I need that? So I think you're right. The incremental build is the best way.
Yeah, I think after it lifts, I'm just gonna be all okay. I'm going to hang out with max 10 people. And then next month, the next month is going to be, okay, I could do 15. Then the next month, 20.
And you're going to go through your list and be like, all right, who's going to be my 10? Who's going to be my 15?
Yeah, it's going to be like,
it's going to be like the new MySpace top.
Yes!
Like,
girl.
Yes!
You didn't make the cut.
Sorry.
Oh, remember that? Remember when you would have people would painstakingly go through your top 5 or top 10 on MySpace? Like, you'd be like, who is it this week?
People used to be so hurt. It's crazy. Like, why were you choosing your 8 friends to display? Like, that's crazy.
And then I always had the responsibility. I was like, I guess I have to put my sister in there.
I know. You have to put family because that means you're a bad person.
I have to show that I have a sense of that. I have to show that I'm family oriented.
Right. Let me put I have 3 siblings. Like, that's already 3 people, y'all.
Oh, I'm lucky. I only have the one. So she had the top spot, even though she didn't deserve it all the time. So the final question we ask all our guests is, you kind of touched on this already, but, you know, feel free to add more. Is there an underrepresented voice in the industry, whether it's an actor, writer, producer, creator, that is not in the mainstream that you think people should know about and deserves more shine?
I'm going to shout out my girl, Amy Aniobi, who...
Yes.
Has she been on the show?
On our show?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. No,
I've written about her, but I don't. She hasn't been on our show.
Yeah, and she's a friend. She's a friend, yeah, because we chat a little bit on Twitter and stuff, though. But I've written about her too.
Phenomenal, and you know, I've watched her career grow and been so lucky to be able to work with her, and I just think that she's a star in every way, and so smart, and it's so interesting in a writer's room. You know, especially insecure writers, or because I'm on camera, I get a lot of credit for the words that are there. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very sensitive to that. You know, I always give people joke credits whenever I'm asked or whatever, you know, and I get to say a lot of her words. And there was a lot of her funny words. And there was this one interview that I did where I literally listened to an interview that she did. And I was like, yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. And I quoted her in the interview and I said, hey, you know, it's like I was watching this interview with my girl, Amy Aniobi, and she was talking about networking across and, you know, how you got to do. And like it went viral and they cut out the part where I gave Amy credit for it. Mm-hmm. And it just looked like it was my soul wisdom. And so I was like, damn, even in real life, like I'm getting shine for Amy's words. So I have to give her props for just being so prolific and amazing.
Yes.
Shout out to Amy.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Issa, for doing this. And we're definitely looking forward to this season of Insecure.
Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, and hopefully you could actually come into the studio again for future projects and we could kiki in person and
please.
Yeah.
I would love that.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Issa. I loved you guys'
interview with Stella too. It was so great.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh yeah. We've done Stella, we've done Yvonne.
Stella, Yvonne, Natasha. Oh, yeah.
And Natasha. And Natasha.
I didn't know y'all did Natasha. So, I have to go back and listen to that one.
Yeah, and then we're gonna do Alex.
Yeah.
Oh, y'all got the whole crew.
We got the whole
Instagram. We'll get them all in.
Okay. We're available.
Okay. All right. Cool. Thank you again.
Thanks, Issa.
Thank you, guys.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.